Hi there. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your journey today. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio. Crimes fueled by emotions. When it comes to emotions, people can react in strange and unexpected ways. Even the most mild-mannered soul can suddenly flip, becoming a vengeful spirit with dark intentions. My special guest tonight is Mitzi Zaretto, and she's here to discuss her book called The Best New True Crime Stories, Crimes of Passion, Obsession, and Revenge. In this book, you'll find twisted true tales of passion and unrequited love turned violent. Examine why some have fully embraced their dark side, resulting to crime to achieve their own special brand of satisfaction and retribution. And you can get Mitzi's book, The Best New True Crime Stories, Crimes of Passion, Obsession, and Revenge, right now on Amazon, in Kindle, audiobook, and paperback. And now, here's my special guest, Mitzi Zaretto.
This is actually the fourth volume in my series, The Best New True Crime Stories. And, I try to come up with something different for each book, you know, a different theme. And, crimes of passion is just something that's people get really excited about that. It just generates a lot of interest. It's a fascinating area. And obsession and revenge, I put them in there as well because, they're all kind of connected. And we've got stories that are perhaps more crimes of passion. Some might be more toward obsession and some might be flat out revenge. And then some are triple whammies and actually have all three elements in them.
All right. Now, and how did you actually go about the let's talk about that. How did you go about the research?
Well, it's an anthology. So it's a collection of several people's work, including my own, of course. Since I'm the editor, I'm the boss, and I put my own story in. But I basically, I do very widely disseminated calls for submissions, including to people that I've worked with before. And just get in, the people will pitch their ideas to me, and I'll give them a go-ahead if it sounds promising. The go-ahead's not the same thing as an acceptance, but it's a go-ahead that you're halfway there. You've given me the idea, and I like the idea. And just start reviewing the stories as they come in and making my decisions and seeing what really works best for a good variety in the book. And that's basically how I do all my anthologies.
Gotcha. Okay. So all your books are anthologies, right? Because the one we did previous was an anthology as well. So all of them are
yes.
Like that.
Well, not every book I've ever done, but in this particular series, these are a collection of stories from multiple authors. Yeah.
Got you. Okay. So, and say, you got a listener that may have a story they want to submit to you sometime in the future for a future book. I mean, how do you actually reach out to people? Do they find you to submit something?
Well, the best thing to do is I always tell people, keep checking my website because I have a tab there that has calls for submission, and that's the first submissions rather. That's the first place I'm going to list the calls before I send them out publicly. Sometimes I'll disseminate it very widely to, for instance, the usual places, like where people would find out about submission calls and newsletters and that sort of thing. And sometimes I don't disseminate it that widely. So really the website's the best place to look for what I'm doing and to get the most up-to-date information is what's still open, what's been closed, that sort of thing.
Okay. So let's jump into a story here. And strangely, yours just jumped out at me, anything about Facebook. I want to hear about, I know there's been some hideous, ridiculous stuff happen on Facebook. So tell me about your story.
Yeah. Well, what appealed to me about this story is, we've just, our society and in recent years, very, very recent years, social media has just become something that's, it's been abused. People seem to have no filter at all, no decorum, nothing. They just let it all out, and often to a negative way. And this particular story, Facebook Mord, is a relatively recent, happened in 2012 in the Netherlands. And it's about how a comment made on a Facebook post ended up in someone being murdered.
And I saw that, not yours, but I've seen it before, where people want to use Facebook for their final act of revenge or whatever they want to inflict on other people. And you know, they know that they have an instant audience for it.
Unfortunately. Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And this particular story actually does involve all three of passion, obsession, and revenge. And what's really particularly sad is this was a young girl. They mentioned it's set in the Netherlands, and it involves a 15-year-old girl who put a comment on her friend's post on Facebook. And it was, you know, it's a sort of comment that, you know, someone would thoughtlessly do. And when you're 15, you're not as, you know, you probably are more thoughtless than when you're older than that. And it just blew up from there. Her friend just got extremely upset and involved her own boyfriend into this. And it just escalated with threats against this girl who put with the comment, threats against the girl's family. Nothing was taken seriously. People just assumed it's just, you know, teenagers mouthing off, doing what they do. And ultimately, the recipient of the comment and her boyfriend recruited somebody to kill this girl, to kill the young girl. So they hired a hitman, a teenage hitman.
That's crazy. All because of a comment.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Just a comment.
I've seen that happen over, I think someone unfriended someone on Facebook and ended up, someone got killed over it. I mean, it's just crazy. Tell me, why do you think that, you know, I mean, social media can be great in a lot of ways. For me personally, I just can't handle a lot of it. I can't deal with a lot of the people wanting to just seem like they just want attention. I just can't deal with it. And I choose to minimize it in my life. I only really use it for the show. But why do you think people are so bothered and so worried about someone unfriending them or saying something on social media? I mean, why do you think that gets to them more so as if they said it out in public to their face? It seems like they take it more personal to me. I don't know what you think. What do you think about that?
You know, that's a good question, because you establish relationships with people on social media. You know, I mean, some of these people, you perhaps have a certain impression of them, of who they are, and then something can happen and they're not who you think they are. And I think that does affect people, and that is a painful thing. You know, it's as if it was a real in-person relationship, so it would be the same. But you know, with social media, it's easy to hide behind your laptop or your phone or your iPad and make these comments. And that's, I think, one thing that social media has done. Whereas before, you would have to be face to face, and perhaps that might curtail your confrontational, you know, a confrontation. Now it's just so easy to just say whatever you want, and you can't do anything because they're on the other side of this electronic connection.
I agree. And I'm wondering, like, some of the just smaller stuff, you say something and I'm thinking, okay, if you're face to face, would you have really been that mad about it? I mean, because you just said it and you go about your business, maybe someone, you know, no one else heard it. But if you put it on their wall or whatever, on their page, for the whole world to, maybe that's what they're feeling. Like, you said this about me and now everybody saw it, or, you know what I'm saying? You kind of making me look bad in front of everyone, and they just can't deal with it. And it just escalates from there. But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly true. But also when you're in person, you could see that person's face and you might know that it wasn't necessarily meant in that way. But here, when you just see the text appearing, it's awfully hard. You know, people do misinterpret things. And I think that
all the time.
And everybody, now you can't say anything about anything because someone's going to take it the wrong way. So it's as if just like nothing to say.
You're exactly right. You'll put something on there and then I'm telling you, we've had it. Someone will take it personal and send a personal message. Are you mad at me about something? Like, no. You know, exactly. It's not about you at all. I haven't spoke to you in 2 years or what. I don't know how you know what I'm saying? It's just it's crazy. And you're right.
Well, thank God we have the emoticons. We could at least maybe put a funny face so they can use
I don't take it personal. I mean, that's very weird and very strange, you know. And people have all these passive aggressive posts, you know, that they put on Facebook. I really can't deal with it.
No, I know. And I use social media and it's like, oh God, this is just becoming too much. And I don't want to stop using it because I have actually made some fantastic friends and people who are in my real life as friends, and for business. So I can't like just suddenly disappear from it, but you know.
I mean, that's good. I mean, if you can make a good friend and then they are very involved in your real life, you know, outside of social media, that's great. But I mean, when you just get so sucked up into all the drama and things like that, it can just give you a headache. But you're right. Sometimes it turns very, very bad and just unbelievably violent outside of social media, and people take it very personally. So, okay, let's talk about another story in your book here. Let's see here. I saw one. Let me go back to the I've seen the dead come alive. What's that about? This is Joe Turner. And are they the real names of the authors of these stories or did you change it?
Of course. Yeah.
Nobody, well, I'm just asking because sometimes the people want them changed or whatever, but go ahead. Tell me about them.
Joe's a real person. He's actually been in previous books of mine as well. This is an incredible story. Again, this by coincidence, you asked me about this one, but this also involves teens. This is about a group of people who are into what they call horrorcore rap, which I'd never heard of until Joe's story turned up. And it's essentially rap, but it deals with sort of dark horror inspired images and lyrics and that sort of thing. And it's about this loner kid in California who is a self-proclaimed horrorcore artist. Yeah, he had a MySpace page. Remember MySpace back in the prehistoric days?
Oh yeah. I had one of those.
Yeah. And so essentially, there was this young teenage girl who lived on the other end of the country, and she sort of hooked up with this guy on MySpace through their shared interest in this particular genre of rap music, and a romance developed. And I mean, it was getting really, really intense, and it was as if they were kindred spirits that had found each other. So ultimately, they said, you know, we need to meet, even though we're, you know, opposite ends of the United States, we have to meet because we were in love. It didn't quite go to plan. They did finally meet. The guy flew out to spend time with this young teenage girl, and the chemistry that they had online did not transfer offline. Things just got really bad. They were going to a music festival for the horrorcore artists, and she pretty much was blowing him off, and she was stuck with him because he was a guest in her home. You know, she and her family said, okay, he could stay there for like 2 weeks and they'll see how it goes. And it didn't go well. And this guy was just festering in him. He was just very miserable and unhappy and jealous because she just wasn't, you know, giving him the time of day. And it resulted in a mass killing of her family. A pretty gruesome, pretty horrible situation.
Okay. I hadn't heard this. And was this in the United States or did you say it was in the United States?
Yeah, it was in Virginia.
Gotcha.
In a small town in Virginia.
Okay. And so that happens too, sometimes, you know, you think you're going to, you know, it's going to be all Skittles and rainbows when you meet someone online. And then when you get together, it's like, oh, God, what did I get myself into?
Generally, though, you don't get the whole family murdered as a result.
Yeah, that's pretty outrageous.
Funny, but I mean, you know,
and I haven't heard this extreme. At all. Yeah, I haven't heard this. Okay, so the girl's name was Emma Niederbrock or something like that.
Niederbrock. Niederbrock, I think it's pronounced.
Gotcha. Yeah. That is unfortunate. Yeah. Wow. And so did he commit suicide or did he live to get
prosecuted? As if it's not horrible enough, he was staying in the house with the corpses.
For the time being that he was okay. So, wow. So how did he get caught? Yeah. Do you know any of that backstory? Or?
Yeah. He went on the run. And he couldn't drive very well. He took the car and he was not driving well. And then he finally ended up at the airport. But by then the cops knew who was behind it. And he was just sitting there waiting for his flight. And that was that.
That's a wild one there. Okay. Yeah. So let's see here. Let's talk about, another one from the book here, and I can't remember what it was, but let me just ask you about let's talk about a story that you didn't include, okay? And I don't know, hopefully you don't do it later on, but if you don't mind talking about one, but can you talk about one that you maybe had a hard time deciding, okay, I want to put it in, or I can't, or
you put me on the spot. You put me on the spot because I don't remember now. Because I'm now actually I'm actually proofing the book number 5, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember which ones I rejected for book number 4.
No, you're good. So, do you keep them? I mean, if you don't put them in like that volume that you're working on, do you keep them for the next one, or how do you do that?
Well, I have on occasion, you know, normally, like I said, because each book is a specific theme, it's not as likely I'll be repeating that same theme. However, sometimes a story will come in that actually is more towards something else, or I feel like, hey, you know, this could work if I decide to do a book on, you know, A, B, C, whatever. So I have in the past kept back a couple of stories. I actually have one, believe it or not, it was sent for my first book, and I'm already like working on 6 and 7 as we speak, but I'm still hanging on to this guy's story. And I keep telling him, hang on, you know, wait, just wait. It's possible. It might work. It's possible. So a very small amount of stories I make hold back on. And, you know, sometimes somebody sends something to me and I'm like thinking, well, this has absolutely really no resemblance to what I'm asking it for. However, I'm working on something else later on that it could work for. So you just never know.
Yeah. Here's another one that that I saw that I want to talk about. It's just one more here. It's a young man, troubled, and Priscilla Rhodes, I guess that's how you pronounce her last name, Rhodes.
Yeah.
Wrote that
one. Yeah, a young man in trouble let me just find that here.
Right.
Yeah, a young man in trouble. There we go. He's simpler than I thought. Yeah, that's an interesting one. This it's a crime of passion, but it's sort of a different crime of passion. It's about a young gay man who lived in San Francisco, and he was, you know, San Francisco is a very expensive place to live, and it has been for a very long time. And even though this story is from the early 80s, it was still expensive. And so this young man, George, he's struggling financially. He and his partner are struggling financially, and his partner's getting antsy, thinking, you know, I think I just want out of this. I'm tired of this, you know, this struggling business. I'm going to leave, go back to Texas where I'm from. So George he wants to salvage this relationship. It's his first real actual relationship. He ends up where he steals several $1 million, which are meant for the incinerator, what they call bad money. Which is when the money gets kind of worn out and the Federal Reserve says, okay, we're just going to, you know, disintegrate this money. So he figured, why should this money be put in a big furnace and burned when I can use it? And since he happened to be a security guard for Brinks, and driving this money, he decided he's going to get hold of it and hopefully salvage his relationship. And this was his crime of passion. It was a financial crime, but it was done because he wanted to hang on to his partner.
And did he get caught doing that, or how long? Did he ever get to spend it to do anything with it or what?
Well, the really sad, it's sad because by the time he got this money, it was too late and his partner just bailed and left. So it was in a way, it was all done for nothing. So George had to go on the run because he was now a criminal. He was now a wanted man. So yes, he did spend the money. He ended up moving to New York and he was just becoming real, you know, just throwing money around left and right. And some stuff even totally ridiculous. He even financed a gay porn film, which apparently was supposedly one of the worst porn films in history. It was so badly shot and badly produced and badly done. But that kind of gave him some notoriety.
So he eventually got caught, I'm just assuming.
He was successfully on the lam for a long time, but how it ended up that he got caught is ultimately he felt that he needed to go back home to San Francisco. That was still home, no matter where he was, and you know, no matter where he was living. He just felt that was where he needed to be, and he did return. And as a result of going back to San Francisco, he did get caught.
Well, he should have stayed in New York. I'm not advocating yeah, for, you know, for someone to do that. But if he stayed in New York, you know, he might have.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to get lost in New York than it is
you
in San
got
it. Francisco.
Yeah, you
this
got that
true.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he had it going on for a minute there. Poor thing.
He did.
So.
I mean, it's sad. It's really sad because, I mean, like, you know, he did it. It's like that song, What I Did for Love, which was from some Broadway play, I think. It's just what he did for love, and it backfired. He didn't get his love back.
Wow. Okay, so let's see here. Tell me about something that, you know, I didn't see. Well, we did talk about revenge, but did you get anything where, well, that familiar song, hold on a minute, I just lost my question here. I totally lost it. Totally lost it. Give me a second here, Mitzi.
Hi, you're fading out on me.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah.
You can hear me? Okay. For some reason, my connection's not good. I'm sorry about that. Okay. So let's just do one more, if you don't mind. Okay. So
sure.
There's one more I want to talk about, and it's the revenge of the Nagpur women. That sounds like something from Thailand. I don't know, but what is that? What is that?
That is actually from India. This is probably, you know, as someone who's been editing true crime for a while, one of the most horrendous cases I've ever heard about. It takes place in a slum in India, and it's a gangster who preys on people in the slum. You know, and that's a pretty common situation in India. But this particular gangster, Aku Yadav, he basically uses rape as a tool, as a weapon of intimidation. And so he becomes quite prolific, a rapist, and there's just no one off limits to him, from little girls to older women, elderly women, pregnant women. He didn't care. So this was his tool to keep control in the slum and continue to like extort money from people, that sort of thing. People were afraid, and to go to the police, that backfired because the police were corrupt. They were being paid off by this gangster. There's one horrendous incident where the woman did go to the police to report and name her rapist, and she ended up being raped by the police officers. Yeah. So, I mean, the situation just came to a head. You're dealing with poor women in the slum, poor people in the slum. They felt they had no recourse. There was nobody looking out for them. They were mostly considered untouchables, the lowest level of castes that you could get. So they didn't count. You know, they did not matter in society. They were pretty much afraid to do anything. But then a savior came along. It was a young lady who had got away from the slum, got an education and a and a job. And she basically got people to say, you know, enough is enough, and we need to do something about this. We need to stop this criminal from terrorizing us. And it is really thanks to her that things turned around. But there is an ultimate revenge against this particular criminal. I don't want to give it away, but it ends up being quite brutal. But you have to pretty much cheer these women on who finally got their own back.
Wow. And I know what it is because I have the book. So, but I won't say it. I will not say it. And I do encourage everyone to get the book. But before we go, Mitzi, I want you to take a moment to tell my listeners where they can find out more about anything else you're working on.
The best place is to check out my website, MitziSerretto.com, MitziSerretto.com. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, so you could see things that I'm up to on there as well. So it's pretty easy to find out what I'm up to. Obviously, if you see a book that looks really dodgy on Amazon, you could probably figure I didn't write it. So
yeah,
keep an eye out. Keep an eye out, and definitely like send me a message through my website if you do see anything. I appreciate as many eyes out there as possible.
Yeah, if I see that, I will definitely let you know. The book is called The Best New True Crime Stories, Crimes of Passion, Obsession, and Revenge, and that is available on Amazon along with all of Mitzi's others, not the other book. That's the counterfeit books or whatever. I'll let you know, seriously.
You don't even have to get it at Amazon. You could get it at some other bookstores too. Give some other people some business.
Mitzi, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me back.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.